Ms. Hansen, do you feel that your being a woman played any type of a role in the president's decision?
Well, first I just would like to say what an honor it is for me to be here before you in this position.
I can't ask somebody to be a Kennedy or a Lincoln. They were men created by their times. What I can ask for is the promise of greatness. And that, Madam Senator, you don't have.
Give me something, Lane. Anything. Hell, just deny it. Once you just deny it.
It is simply beneath my dignity.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Tobin Addington, and here we are, the first episode.
Yay!
Yay!
High five!
High five across the interwebs.
The West.
I'm really excited. This is going to be, and I'm so glad we decided to start with this movie. I think this was your suggestion.
Oh, thank you. I'll take the credit. I was also going to say, I'm so excited that we're starting with this movie because I love it so much and have loved it so much for years. In fact, to watch it in preparation for this podcast, I had to rent it because I lend my copy out so often.
Oh, wow.
For people to watch it, because it's important, that it only resides with me about a quarter of the time. And indeed, right now, a good friend of mine has it. But that's also, I think, demonstrates my commitment that I rented a film that I already own for this.
Yeah, definitely. And this is a hard movie to track down. I mean, there's no Blu-ray of it. I guess it's not hard. I mean, you can rent it online and you can buy it online. Like you can't, yeah, as you just said. But I guess what I'm saying is that as like they're scraping the bottom of a few barrels to release things on Blu-ray and 4K. And can we please get a contender, a nice,
right,
beautiful transfer? Because there are some YouTube clips that look better than my DVD.
And I'm sure better than the quality that I watched rented from Amazon last night. It looked real rough,
real shaky.
Compared to in my mind when it's immaculate.
Right.
But yeah, why is Netflix not recommending this film to me every time I open the app?
I guess they don't know you as well as they think they do. But you know what? We should make sure people know us better than that. That's an attempt at a segue.
That's great. I liked it.
So tell Netflix who you are.
Hello, my name is Aislinn, and I am the director of a women's center at a university in Oregon. And I want to be part of this show because I've always had that lens of that gender lens on, even before it was my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Tobin, you and I have gotten into a number of conversations about women in film over our lifetime together. Mm-hmm. Period.
This is nice. We should always make our guests tell us why they want to be on the show, why they should be on the show.
Yes.
We should call this segment credentials.
I love it because then I get to say I have a PhD every other week.
Right. There you go. There you go. So my credentials, I am a filmmaker and a screenwriter, and I teach film classes at university. And yeah, that's why I'm here. and I am really, really excited that we are launching this podcast to talk about movies that are directed by or have in the lead role fearless women. And we're going to talk about some that are steps forward and some that maybe are steps back or steps sideways.
Or stuck in the snow.
So we're going to sort of be looking at all those things, but we wanted to start with a movie that we have loved for years.
And I want to interrupt you real quick while we're saying why we're here. I just want to give a shout out to how we're here and say thank you to the Cage Club Network for having us and promoting us and supporting us. So thank you. We're excited.
Thanks, y'all. It's a great place to call home. So our first movie here, as you all hopefully know, because you've looked at the title of this episode, is The Contender from 2000. And you're still listening, yeah. If you've made it this far. This is a film from 2000, written and directed by Rod Lurie, starring Joan Allen. I don't know why I upspoke that. Starring Joan Allen.
It's because in the notes, I'll tell for the listeners, in the notes, there's an exclamation point. And while it is for the movie, I think because Tobin wrote that sentence, it is for Joan Allen, because Tobin has a crush on Joan Allen.
I have a major crush on Joan Allen. I had a crush on Joan Allen going into this movie. Look, there are three actors from from my youth. who I adored and had major crushes on. One was Laura Dern. Thank you very much.
Oh.
One was Michelle Pfeiffer, and one was Joan Allen. These are the big three.
See, I knew two of those, but I thought, I knew Joan Allen. We all knew Michelle Pfeiffer. but I thought if you were asking me, I would have thought your third pick would be Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Oh, yes. Okay. Right. There are four.
There's Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. Honorable mention.
Yeah. No, but you clearly don't spend any time on Twitter, because every third tweet is about Laura Dern
For my lack of social media. Well, I'll get better, listeners.
Listen, I went to Jurassic Park in the theater 9 times, not just because I love Jurassic Park.
Gotcha.
Dr. Ellie Sattler is one of my favorite characters. It always wow. has been. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we'll do a bonus Laura Dern retrospective just because of my ignorance.
Well, and it's interesting that to move into our next segment, the sort of history of this movie, I wasn't the only one who thought very highly of Joan Allen. Rod Lurie, who had before this movie had made a short and a very, very low budget feature, which we'll talk about in a minute. He had been watching Joan Allen's career, as had we all, and was noting that even though she was getting great roles, or sort of high profile roles, that she was very often playing, the wife of the main character, right?
Right.
So she's in Nixon.
She's in Face Off.
She's in The Ice Storm, which is a wonderful movie.
Yeah.
She's in The Crucible, where she's very, very good as Elizabeth Proctor. And she's, she's getting Academy Award nominations for some of these. She's doing Pleasantville, which is a little bit more of a sort of leading role, although she is neither of the two kids, right? Like,
right.
She's sort of putting in these supporting performances that are kind of dazzling and amazing and raw. And he sees this and is like, apparently the story goes, was giving her an award at an awards thing sometime and said, I made a joke that he was going to write a movie for her. And she says, if you write it, I'll read it.
Nice.
And so he wrote it in a few weeks and sent it to her, and they were off to the races. So it was out of his appreciation for Joan Allen that this whole movie emerges.
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic. I think it's fantastic.
I know, I do. I think it's a great story. I remember I'm having some deja vu because I remember Tobin telling me that story 17 years ago.
Oh, really?
When we were on our way to the theater to see The Contender. I believe Tobin had seen it once already. I'm going to stop talking to you as if you're not in the room. It was something I was trying out. I'm done now. So obviously Joan Allen is the lead actor, the lead character in this film. What other notable roles do women have in this production?
As you said, you have Joan Allen as the lead actor. And then you have the only other one I can find is a woman named Stephanie Antosca, who is the producer for the Washington, D.C. segments. Now, that apparently is the sort of main thing she does. She's done it for a bunch of West Wing episodes when they would go to D.C. and shoot. And then notably for us here, one of our upcoming movies, Zero Dark Thirty, she produced the D.C. segments. But for a movie that is about a strong female character who is sort of up against the patriarchy, and a movie that ends with for our daughters, quote, like, you know, quote at the end, there are only two women in sort of substantial major roles behind the camera.
I did notice that, particularly on this watch. And then I don't want to say I could tell by the way it some of it played out, because it is a story that very much has to do with her being a woman. But I feel like I could tell, you know, and maybe some of that is dating it. And maybe some of that is the culture she's in, which is the Washington, D.C., very much boys club. But I don't want to get ahead of us. I will just say I noted that, and it tracked for me. I'm like, yep, that tracks.
I agree. I am very curious as we get into it to hear how, like, where what places or what sort of themes or moments illustrated that for you. But I felt that too. I think I could feel that too.
Next up, we're going to give a brief plot summary for this film. So I'm going to start with the first up review from IMDb. And the first three words are a political thriller. Now, this, I can tell you, thriller is on the back of the DVD case you mentioned as well. And let's in a minute, not yet, but let's in a minute discuss whether or not you think that's an appropriate term. What rings a bell for me with that is few years ago, I was at our family summer home, and
wow, so fancy sound
in our cabin. I was in our cabin with a friend of mine from college, and we were trying to figure out what movie to watch. And Tobin, you had lent Mom probably a dozen of your movies, things that you thought she should see, or you thought she would enjoy, or both. And as we were looking through them, my friend stopped and looked at me and said, "You know, on three of these boxes describe themselves as taut thrillers." And so, number one, I didn't know that was such a trite phrase. But number two, Tobin really likes taut thrillers.
I do. I really
like a thriller when it's taut.
I really like taut thrillers.
And so while I agree this film is taut, I don't know if I agree it's a thriller, but I digress. Here we go. A political thriller about Lane Hansen, a senator who is nominated to become vice president following the death of the previous office holder. During the confirmation process, Lane is the victim of a vicious attack on her personal life in which stories of sexual deviancy are spread. She is torn as to whether she should fight back or stick to her high principles and refuse to comment on the allegations.
Yeah,
so it's good. You know, it's not written the way I would have written it, but
it's a little passive.
It tells you. It tells you some things. So then from Metacritic, we have this. Sex secrets from a U.S. senator's past come to light as she is nominated for vice president. Now, that is inaccurate in all the ways.
Yes, in all the ways. In all the ways.
She
is a U.S. senator, and she's been nominated to be vice president. But other than it's other basically than that, all wrong.
And so, I think, as you say, we want to include these things to demonstrate how different perspectives might view this film.
Right.
That is either the perspective of someone who didn't watch it or didn't get it.
Right. Exactly.
And either way, I'm not a fan.
So let me give you my synopsis, and then we can get into it. This is how I see the movie. Joan Allen stars as Lane Hansen, an Ohio senator who's tapped by a quirky but wily Democratic president, played by Jeff Bridges, to fill the vacancy left by the death of his vice president. The problem is Gary Oldman's conservative congressman Shelley Runyon is in charge of her confirmation. Runyon thinks there are better candidates and that Hansen's only been nominated because she's a woman. Sexual allegations emerge about Hansen's past, and Runyon uses them and more to smear her at the hearings. Hansen refuses to respond to the accusations, saying it's beneath the dignity of the office and her past is none of their business. This infuriates everybody, including a mustacheless Sam Elliott, who plays the president's chief of staff. I think that's who he plays. I know his name's Kermit, which I love, as well as the president himself. But Hansen refuses to yield, and following her powerful closing statement, the president addresses a joint session of Congress, calls them out for cowardice, and insists they vote publicly then and there to confirm Senator Hansen, making her the first woman to serve as vice president of these United States.
I love it. Even as you just describe that last scene, I get the goosebumps again. And you've done so well. It's almost as if you're a writer or something. by saying quirky but wily, because that is what I get. I think there's a lot to say about first impressions in this film. And I remember seeing Jeff Bridges' first scene and thinking, who is this ridiculous human? Is he a hillbilly? Is he not? And this was like just pre-George W. So I wasn't used to bumbling in that office, right? This was after American President and just as West Wing is starting, right? So I'm used to something a little bit different. And so I remember the turn for me to love Jeff Bridges is slow in this movie, right? But that's just one of the many first impressions that we get. The first for me in this watching that I had not noticed before was the terrible version of Ring of Fire playing.
Yes.
Oh, it's awful.
Yes, terrible.
And this has nothing to do with women in film, other than that I don't know that a woman would have joined. Well, I guess a woman is singing. And the weird title.
Yeah. It's so
90s. What do you call that?
This is so late 90s, like video editing titles where they cut out the title, from this black screen. It's terrible. It's awful. It's really, really bad.
Very odd. But that leads us to another first impression, which is of the more likely candidate for the office, right? Governor Hathaway.
Right.
As he's, chumming around with a reporter.
Right. And this is played by William Peterson, who everyone now knows from CSI. That became his sort of big signature thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And before that, Neil Grissom.
Grissom. Yeah. Okay.
And before that, he's in another of my favorite movies that also co-stars Joan Allen, called Manhunter, a Michael Mann movie based on the first Hannibal Lecter book. It's a wonderful book. And he's great. He's sort of great in it. And if you see that movie, not to get off on a on a tangent, but if you see that movie, you realize that William Peterson's character on CSI is sort of a just a goof on that character.
It's
much more serious.
I've seen the first 3 minutes of Manhunter, and it was too scary for me.
Yeah, scary. It's scary. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, advisory.
Yeah. Yep.
So I've got Governor Hathaway, likable hero. I've got President appears a little doofy.
Yep.
And and then then I'm so interested. Reason I was talking about introductions is the way Lane Hansen is introduced.
Yes. Tell us how she's introduced. Tell us.
And that is the phone rings in her office while she's having sex with her husband.
Yep.
And what we come to find out is her husband. And it's the president's office calling to bring her in to discuss the vice presidency. But
And it actually starts with an image of Hathaway, who we know has been in the Oval Office and has been told he's not going to be chosen to be vice president because he was unable to save this woman who drowned in a car accident right next to where he was fishing with a reporter. So he's been denied this thing. We see him on screen. This is a thing this movie does really well a few times, is you'll see an event happen and then you will see that character sort of reacting or other characters reacting via the media in the background. So we get a sense of their next move while the movie shifts focus. And here it shifts focus. We hear two people sort of in a happily getting it on or headed that way. And then the phone rings. And as you say, it's the president.
One might say.
Right. And playfully, it's a for a movie that's going to treat sex in a variety of ways with what we'll get into, that this is an interesting way to begin the movie, I think. And it does tell something about their relationship, don't you think?
I do. And yes, I think it says something about their relationship. And I think it says something about her sexuality and her, I would say, comfortability with herself in that it's her office or his office. I guess her office because
she's got the office
for her. She's got the office. And that if I may, like, he's working for her in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah.
So on the one hand, I think you could look at it as like you're introducing her already sexualized, but which is true. Okay.
Which is true.
True.
Yeah.
But then also you're immediately looking at her as powerful.
Right. And sexualized. And
self-possessed.
Right. And sexualized via the situation in the script, not the camera. We're not, you know, she's fully clothed. Like he's the one we see like, what do you call it? Lower bun, like side bun. We see a little bit of his buttocks at the, in the shop. And that plays as funny, you know, in that moment, right? Like this is not a movie that's going to, it's not in this moment being salacious with that sex at all. I think it's establishing her, as you say, as a sexual being, and her sort of like their relationship and the dominance in terms of who's got the higher job in that, in that way.
And a little bit funny, and I caught with your pants down, like, you know, how is her memoirist going to be able to spin that of where were you when you got the call?
Right. Well, exactly. Well, exactly.
I was at my desk.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Right. Right.
And then immediately from there to she's at the White House there, he's going to announce her this, and 3 to 5 men are talking to her about her outfit.
Even on the way to the office, one of her aides in the car makes a comment about, you're going to meet the president and you look great. Doesn't she look great? Like, he says this on the way. Then they talk about it in the Oval Office. Then they talk about it in the Rose Garden as they're sort of wandering through and having a discussion. And it comes up in sort of an extended coda to that scene where various characters seem to have different points of view on whether what she's wearing is the correct thing for this for this moment. And it is, do you feel like the film is self-reflexive about, like, is it does it recognize what it's doing there, or what's your read on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, I got it. I rather than self-reflexive, I would put it as it's doing that intentionally. Right. It knows what it's saying, but at that point, at least, it's not challenging that, you know, where I depending on who's in the audience.
Yeah.
So that's something I would bump on immediately, say there's 5 men talking about her outfit. The way it's presented, I don't think that would strike anyone as odd or inappropriate or whatever that didn't already have those feeling. So maybe a little bit of preaching to the choir. That being said, I am confident it's not any different now.
Oh yeah, totally, totally.
And in terms of what's interesting, real life,
right, and what the focus is going to be in that moment from men to women versus women to men. I think the clue to me that the movie is in on the fact that this is not the appropriate thing to be doing at this moment is that it does linger on that. Like it doesn't, because that sort of motif repeats 3 times or so, but from all the men, that it is.
There's no women there. Right. No, I mean, that's my other point.
Right.
Is that 3 to 5 men are telling her that because those are the only people involved.
Right. 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 Exactly. Exactly.
So I would say that is the part that they're not challenging. So, yes.
Yes. I agree.
They're winking at us that, oh, look at these men trying to dress this woman. But I think then my pushback to that, were I to have, you know, be in any room with any of these people, it would be, because you have. The rest of the room is filled with men. And whether that's, I'm talking about in real life or talking about in the film, you know, both can be true.
And that feels like something that you could have had her say too, you know, like that could be something, you know, true. I feel like the movie is taking the ball halfway down the court in these moments.
Very true. And there is a court in a couple of things. Before we get too much further with the fourth love of your life, Joan Allen.
Yes.
Because, you know, immediately gender and politics are intertwined and moving, you know, together in this film. I want to say one more first impression.
Yeah, tell me.
Gary Oldman. And here's what it is. How did they make Sirius Black so decisively unfuckable? Because in other circumstances, this is a sexy man.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Wait, are you, do you think he's sexy here as Shelley Runyon?
No, I'm saying he's unfuckable here.
I'm saying Sirius Black. Yes, like, I'm with you now. I see. I thought you meant he was like, how could they make him, how could they make Sirius Black unfuckable? Well, the terrible thing to do is Sirius Black. I'm like, I thought this kind of, but they did here.
Yes. So, it's a sandwich for me. I saw this film and I saw this guy that was just
odious.
Makes my skin cut raw.
Right, right.
And then fast forward 9 years. And I see a film called The Prisoner of Azkaban. A little film. I don't know if you've heard of it. And there is a character with the leather and the tattoos and the
ringing all
the
your bells.
Swagger that I thought, yes. And then you put the other end of the sandwich on there with watching this movie again. And it just ruins it.
Well, because he's a very good actor.
Okay. That must be it.
He's a very good actor, yeah. and they do a great job, I think, with his costuming here. I mean, it really is with these great big glasses, and he does kind of funny chewing things with his mouth.
Oh, God, yes, you know? The food in this movie.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting. It's a really interesting counterpoint that he's doing. What I wonder is if he had seen any of Jeff Bridges' scenes where he, as the president, is always showing off how he can order whatever food he wants from his chef Otto, and using food as a weapon so often, or a part of his arsenal, a tool in his arsenal, and you have this other guy who's sort of wasted away, seems to be kind of wasted away, skinny and scrawny, and is always more sort of moving his mouth and can't like he's. And always just smoking. He's never eating.
He eats an entire steak.
Right. Until he's finishing his steak, or forced to finish steak really quickly because the president orders him a cookie big scene.
No, in the early one when Joan Allen meets him for lunch and he keeps trying to order for her.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Which I love, that's a whole scene we could just talk about. They are the adversaries in this, as you pointed out in your summary. And the her team says, well, of course, you have to have lunch with him. That's customary.
Right.
And she shows up, I would say probably vaguely on time. And he's already eating. Like he's doing like all the power play moves.
Yes, yes, yes. Totally,
and she's
totally.
Unflapped.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She knows other people in the restaurant. And she knows the maitre d' that comes over.
Right.
And he knows her order, and it's this whole thing, and he keeps trying to order a steak for her while he's eating his, and it was so disgusting.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And unflappable is a great word. We should note, too, she comes into this meeting with this secret
dossier
that's been compiled on these allegations that she had this incident occurred in her past, and that he's going to weaponize in the hearings most likely, and he doesn't know that she has it. But so she comes into it sort of armored, knowing this is what's going on.
Totally.
This is one of the sort of Oscar scenes, right? Mm-hmm. The first tete-a-tete between them, and the only one that happens in private.
Lane,
Shelley.
I'm sorry, I started.
You were
late.
Not too late, I hope.
A minute or two. Were you tied up with anything?
No, sorry, I'm just late. Hi, Clem.
Don't worry. I ordered you the porterhouse.
Oh, no, I don't eat meat. I'll just have the penne.
You should. You should really try the steak.
Ask Hugo to burn it on the outside.
No,
thanks. It's all right. I really don't eat meat. I'll just go ahead with the penne.
Spicy.
Yes, please.
How are Will and the boy?
Let's forgo the small talk today, Shelley. It'll make me feel cheap.
Let the big talk begin.
Have you seen this?
That's my, my file on you, Senator.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get it?
Have you read it yet?
How did you get it? Have you read it?
What do you have to say for yourself?
With all due respect, Madam Senator, it doesn't matter what I have to say for myself.
Oh, it doesn't. Well, it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that all you can claim about me is that I had sex while
deviant
I...
Deviant sex.
Oh, who deviant? Who says it was deviant?
I do. And what I say, the American people will believe. And you know why? Because I'll have a very big microphone in front of me.
We meet Gary Oldman with the president's folks, because they're coming in to say, hey, we hope there is a smooth confirmation, blah, blah. Right. And it's Kermit who says putting a woman in the office means something to him.
Right.
And we can talk about whether that's, you know, a worthy goal or how that's a worthy goal, how it's not. But Shelley has it out for her from the beginning.
Right.
He's like, no dice on this.
And he makes claims, and we can talk about whether we think they're true or not, that it's because he thinks there are better candidates.
Right.
This is what he says to her and to Kermit and to the president. He said, saying we know there are better, we all know there are better people for this job. So you're just giving it to her because she's a woman, which Kermit kind of confirms in that scene. So what's your take on that? Do you think where do you come down on Gary Oldman for this? How much of it is what having it out for her, and how much of it is he wants Hathaway in that job?
I think it's having it out for her and having it out for the president. And that I think Hathaway has very little to do with it other than you're right. They do seem to have a relationship later. So like he's a Democrat that can work with him.
Right.
But I think he has it out for Lane because of some of their political disagreements, because he is, fanatical about something, or fundamentalist, whatever.
It's through 1990s, late 1990s lens. Yeah.
Right. And that she has switched parties. So he sees her as a traitor. What I think, even more than disliking her, I think he has, or maybe on the same level, I don't know degree wise, but he has equal, if not greater, disdain for the president. And I picked up a line that I hadn't before. Mm-hmm. Later, the president mentions like beating him at some point, or because of, yes, I did this to Shelley. Right. So was he? I don't know in what context, right? Were they both senators? Did Runyon have a bid for the presidency? Like what? Because I can't imagine that. And I don't think that's true. But there's some past there where he feels slighted. Like, okay, well, you screwed me, I'm going to screw you back.
Right.
Also, because I think there's a lot of vindictiveness and whatever. But also he truly believe it, and that he's going to be on the correct side of history.
Right.
So if he's the one that stops this wrong choice from making it, then he's going to get the glory. And he, in that awkward lunch, he talks about greatness and that she doesn't have it. And, I'm sitting there watching, thinking, well, who are you to talk, little man? He's perceiving himself as in the position of power and knowledge and understanding of those things. And so that leads me to assume that he thinks he is a person who is capable of greatness. And this is going to be his key to greatness. So it's sort of like the president's legacy of putting a woman in office versus Shelley's legacy of blocking the president from getting this done.
Yeah, that all feels right. I like your point of view. I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah, he does. There was the movie came in to some controversy after it was released, when Gary Oldman apparently felt that the script that he had signed up for was more balanced, that nobody came off as, as all good or all bad. And that in the editing of the movie, particularly when Spielberg saw it and wanted to release it as the first movie that DreamWorks released but hadn't produced, that it sort of, they added more sort of soaring music and leaned into her as the victim and him as the perpetrator. Traitor, and made that stuff more menacing, I think there's something to that. We can talk about that as it goes. Maybe so either
question and a comment.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you know Rod Lurie's response to that?
He and DreamWorks denied that they like fiddled too much with the film.
Gotcha. The one thing I will agree with Gary Oldman or Shelley Runyon on is the music bothered me.
Yeah, yeah, totally. The music does feel thrown in after
it's
the fact.
It's salty and forced, especially if it's a thriller with not thriller music, can I tell you? But I think it underlined things that didn't need it.
Exactly.
We know we're in the White House, right? We know where I think sometimes music can elevate. And I would imagine that's the purpose of it a lot in film. Tell me I'm wrong if I am. But it just deflated things in this for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. It takes the air out of stuff or it sort of I felt like it was I wanted to say to the music, yeah, I know.
Yes, exactly.
I got it. I'm watching carefully and I'm with it. Thank you very much. And I think it is a little on the nose. It does feel to me like a filmmaker early in his career who, someone, and I'm just this is just me reading between the lines and having some sort of knowledge of how this goes sometimes is that he, the Spielberg wants to produce, like release his movie and the, suits there like, what would be great? This feels like a great, as the end quote, it's going to say for our daughter's movie, maybe we could lean into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it got away from them a little bit. It felt more like that kind of a decision as opposed to a sort of filmmaking decision. I could be wrong. It doesn't kill the movie, but it does hurt those moments.
So from the beginning of the allegations, the scandal, whatever, she's constantly saying, I will not comment. I will not comment. It's beneath my dignity. It's beneath the dignity of the office. And, first the president's, Kermit says, deny, deny, deny. And then later in the film says, confess, confess, confess.
Right, right. He wants her to do something. Please right. Just do something.
So what do you think about that? The entire time she says, because we learn at the end that it could not possibly be her. Right. There's a birthmark right on the woman in the pictures that she does not have.
It's the other way around. But yep.
There you go. That makes more sense because it's more provable that way.
Yep.
But yes. So it's absolutely not her.
Right.
Knowing that the whole time, because, of course, we've both watched this movie many, many times.
Yeah.
That we are in on that secret. What do you think about her, the character's choices?
It's interesting because it's one of the times in this movie that I'm not sure you could actually get away with it. Mm. I'm not sure today anyway, maybe you could in 2000. I'm not sure today you could. And she has this great moment with Christian Slater, who we should also talk about. Who comes to see her in her office and is like, he's on the committee. He's one of the Democrats on the committee and comes into the movie not liking her, right? He comes into the movie like, first he says he could be objective. Then he says, I'm not going to be objective. I'm not going to vote for her. I don't think she's qualified.
In order to get on the committee, because Shelley is like, no, not you. I don't want you. And then he says, basically my interpretation of the dance they do is like, yeah, but if I'm on your side, we have me. And so this is maybe something we disagree on. I am not convinced. I don't think he cares a lot about her. I know he doesn't like that she switched parties, but he's new. I don't think he has a history with her. I don't think he cares. I think he wants to be on that committee.
Well, he wants Hathaway is what he wants. That's what he tells. Mm. That's what he tells everybody. He has a conversation with if he just wanted to be on the committee, then I think he would have bent more easily to Jeff Bridges's, to his will with the shark steak sandwich scene. He talks about following his heart, and the character's a little confused for me. Yeah. But anyway, he has this scene with her, and she brings up the first person to go before the House Un-American's Activities Committee. That's the best argument I think this movie has for what she does.
Yeah.
So, what can I do for you, Mr. Webster?
Well, I'm sure you're wondering why I'm here.
I think you're here because you want to know why I'm not fighting back. Because despite it all, you got some odd sense of fair play. And you're kicking my ass. It's gone from feeling like easy pickings to out and out bullying.
I just feel like there should be some back and forth between us, you and the committee.
I'll give you back and forth on Social Security, relations with Israel, on the Dow Jones, the census, almost everything, but not this. No, not my personal life. It's just nobody's business.
Well, that's not what the people will tell you. The people will tell you that it is their business, that you're setting the standards of morality for their children, especially their girls.
Have you ever heard of Isaac Lamb?
Isaac Lamb, no.
He was the first one to come before HUAC, the House Un-American Activities Committee. And he was also the first one to name names, first one to cooperate with the government. The dominoes fell from there. Careers crushed, families destroyed. Just imagine, Mr. Webster, if Mr. Lamb had just said, fuck you, to the committee, imagine how much harder he would have made it for them.
Are you accusing the committee of sexual McCarthyism?
Well, it's not necessary to make the accusation. Oh, I just can't respond to the committee's lightly veiled accusations because it's not okay for them to be made.
Or maybe you can't respond because the answers you have to give are too embarrassing.
You know what? You're young. It's okay. You're young. And I'm just going to choose to be amused by your naivete, give you the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to spell it out for you even more clearly. If I were a man, nobody would care how many sexual partners I had when I was in college. And if it's not relevant for a man, it's not relevant for a woman. Jerry, send the folks back in, would you, please?
Okay, sir.
I'm not saying it's stronger than the dignity argument because that is a beautiful and poetic argument.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to, it's hard to watch, especially knowing.
Yes.
I mean, because when you don't know whether it's true or not, or what parts of it are true, I think you get a little more not saying anything. Maybe.
Uh-huh.
And it then become a different issue of like, well, it's nobody's business, which is 100% true. But I think you're right that makes that, it must be so difficult to sit there
right.
and have people say all those things about you. And what do you do? I mean, I can't imagine there being depositions about me that were complete lies.
Yeah.
Like I can't fathom that, and not just wanting to scream.
It is a nightmare of mine that I cannot handle people like spreading untruths about me. So word to the wise, everyone out there, if you really want to get under my skin, like people misrepresenting me, I couldn't do what she does. There's right. no, it's just not in my constitution to do what she does. But she's made of, you know, sterner stuff.
Yeah.
This is, and maybe it is the sort of thing that the first woman to, you know, in this version of America, the first woman to ascend to a higher office in the executive has to do. Like
right.
maybe she does have to hold this line. It's not just for sort of politicians in general, but for future women sort of at her level.
Well, and I guess even when you reminded me of that scene, that's what I was thinking of it at. I wasn't thinking of it as with the McCarthyism era example. I wasn't thinking that directly just to politics and what's on and off the table that way. I was thinking of that in terms of women and making those kind of discussions and accusations, whatever, not null and void, but yeah,
more out of bounds, like drawing a line, drawing a boundary.
If we just say if because she ostensibly says, fuck you, I'm not about that, and still perseveres.
We should talk too about this, about what the scandal is, because I think that plays really differently in 2018 than it did in the year 2000.
So the pictures and the deposition that we hear part of describe a scene, a sorority, hazing, a sorority, what do you call it?
Initiation.
Thank you. Initiation that turns into what they describe it as a gangbang with a blonde woman who may or may not be Joan Allen, but is not Joan Allen, having sexual relations with multiple people at a time with a bunch of other people in the room watching.
Right.
And then in the deposition that she's carted off into another room and young men keep going in and out, but we don't know what happens after that.
Right.
And then I assume then she got into the sorority.
Yeah, presumably.
That's not addressed in the
No, show. They I guess they don't mention that.
But so what Tobin, what about that is troubling for you?
Well, a number of things, but one of them that I think plays really differently now is that if this allegation were to come out today, I think it would come out in a different way. It would be like, look what this woman was assaulted in college.
Yes.
Like, I don't think it would, and I don't think it would come out as. Look, this may be naive of me, but I think there's be a less of a chance today of a woman who's a sitting United States senator to have something like this in her past come out and it to like derail her confirmation. What I think that this would do today is sort of, I mean, look, there are all kinds of other political reasons why this movie is maybe not possible today.
Sure.
That we can sort of talk about later. But I feel like the movie and the character, all the characters in the movie view this as, quote unquote, her indiscretion. And the movie really does seem to, you know, let me put it this way. If at the end of the movie it turned out that this had happened to her, the movie's point of view is still that this is her indiscretion from her past, and that the movie's saying that like men have indiscretions in their pasts, so women should be allowed to have indiscretions in their pasts too. The problem with that is that this is not an indiscretion in her past.
Right.
This is a crime that was perpetrated against her, and I think that politics aside, it would be viewed like the shots of that in this movie, as chilling as they appeared in the year 2000, are to me would be read much differently today. Don't you think?
Yes.
Not that they should be.
They should be in that what is described is assault. So
right.
I don't know if it should or shouldn't. When you said that last thing, you messed with my head.
Sorry.
I agree with you that it would be seen differently. Well, it's hard because all this was such. Oh no, it was made public because of because Shelley tells everybody the website to go to to see it.
www.mitchellreport.
I was so mad. So mad still. So I do think she would get support. And we don't really know. I mean, we see what I loved was seeing her being driven up somewhere and stopping to sign autographs and shake hands with so many women.
Yes.
Right. So I think those women would still support her, and there would be women and women's organizations, many of whom have allied men involved, that would say, you know, she's a survivor, and would try to pivot from her indiscretion to someone else's indiscretion, or someone else's crime. So I agree with you on that. I still think it would be very politically problematic. Because I think the terrible things that they were saying about her, people would still publicly say, and people would still publicly believe. So I don't think that the cultural differences would make for that much better of a time for her. And especially considering... Let's say the confirmation panel was the same, but in 2017, I don't think it would be any better for her.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think she'd have any easier a time, but I don't think it would be just this that would be the.
You said it would keep her from being confirmed.
I do not think this would be the thing that would keep her from being confirmed. When I see women taking to various. State houses, as well as in the well of Congress, and describing their own assaults, sort of tearfully, and they're not being thrown out of office.
Sure,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think there is something different about the climate today that no one mentions this as assault in this movie.
Right.
No one.
Absolutely. So I think I agree with you very much that would be perceived differently.
Her defenders would have an entirely different vocabulary to talk about that with, and I think would be able to sort of allow the public to view it more appropriately, more accurately. And that's not happening. That's not even nodded to in this movie. I don't think the movie's even fully aware of that. I guess that's what I'm saying.
I agree. But again, I think we're talking about two slightly different things when you say the public versus the men she's sitting in front of.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. No, yeah.
So that's the question that then I think is, would Shelley Runyon's lens be any different in 2017?
No.
Than it was in the year 2000. And so I think for him today, it would still be her indiscretion, even
maybe
if
so.
Everyone else is saying this is assault. This is assault. This is assault.
I guess what I'm saying is that we have come so far past this being a thing to sink a nomination. If you look at people being confirmed today for jobs, sure. Like who have all kinds of shady dealings, improprieties, blatant in inability to do their jobs, like that there's all kinds of who are still sort of being confirmed into various offices. That I feel like the hyperpartisanship of today, could a sitting Democratic president get a vice president? Could a sitting Republican president get a vice president from a Congress controlled by the other party? I mean, we spent a year waiting for Obama to be able to sit a Supreme Court justice. So in some ways, it's all moot today a little
that's
bit.
That's what I was butting in to say. Also, that's sort of a little bit of a different set of questions for me. I think I just. There are a lot of things now that I'm excited about in terms of what we will tolerate and what we won't and what we will focus on and what we won't. I am just very hesitant to paint too rosy a picture.
Yeah, no, I hear that. And I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right. But I think that, I don't know. I think it's something to consider. I do think that the movie, as I say, is just not aware of what it's dealing with there.
In a way that a lot aren't and still aren't. I was just doing some homework background in preparation for some events we have coming up about consent portrayed in the media and who does it well and who does it poorly. And some of the people who do it well and poorly. Yeah. I mean, there are great examples in the past and there are terrible examples in the past.
Uh-huh.
And today there are some great examples and there are some terrible. And within the same world, like the same series, they got that one right, but they got that one wrong so hard. Or, well, I love this character, but that character is technically a pedophile. So, I guess that's kind of where I'm looking at it from. You are right. In the world of this movie, they're not recognizing that this is assault, but I don't think that's unique to this movie.
Yeah, agreed. I guess my thought is that this movie of all movies felt like it maybe should have or could have, I think this movie, I think this movie has its idealism in the right place in that, in that way. It's a fault of the movie that it doesn't see that, and a fault of the time. I guess that's what I'm saying. If this movie was being made today, someone is going to make that change in that movie. Like, there's no way this movie comes out today like this. It might get things wrong. I'm not saying it would get it right, but it would at least be part of the, someone would say it. Like, I guarantee.
In fact, for those of you watching on the live video stream, I did roll my eyes when Tobin said,
Spielberg produces this movie out of whatever was left of DreamWorks today. There would be more women in the, Kathleen Kennedy is going to be in the room helping make that decision. Like, they're going to be, that's why I say I guarantee you. I'm not saying any movie. I'm saying these people make this movie today. Okay. And that would be addressed because I have had conversations with people who have made these suggestions about these kind of things in movies today,
right.
Like early on in the stages of things. So I just think it's the, maybe I should say I guarantee it. The chances are much, much higher.
Sure.
Because I think the movie is going to be ahead of this movie made today by these people is going to be maybe ahead of culture in some ways.
I wanted to talk just briefly about the other women in this movie.
Yes.
And the other characters, because what I think they all have in common is that I think there are very strong women characters throughout. And whether that's in a ultimately positive or negative or good guy, bad guy kind of way. But, you know, we meet Governor Hathaway's wife when he's doing his first interview after the incident.
Fiona.
Fiona? That's Fiona. That's a weird, that's an odd.
He says, what would you have me do, Fiona? And he like the Fiona, he like, sticks
there's
her with
some,
Fiona.
Yeah, yeah. Some disdain there. And she has such strong opinions about what he should do and what he shouldn't do and who's on his team and that. And then when he comes home from the White House, having been told he doesn't have the nomination, she's waiting outside the front door to.
And she is pissed.
She's very, very upset. And so they are. It would be interesting for those characters to describe their relationship separately, like in separate rooms, like dating game style, because I think she's, you know, she seems to have political aspirations, but like for her husband, you know what I mean? Like, I think for her, their identities are quite enmeshed.
Yes. Agreed.
And so his, you know, his triumphs would be because of her support. And his failures are because of his ineptitude. The strong, it's like super strong, self-possessed lady, just like Lane Hansen, but different.
Yeah.
And then you have Shelley Runyon's wife, who is not impressed anymore with any of it.
Yes.
She sees the dossier of incriminating, in quotes, photos, and is just like, how she takes that personally in that, you know, when we talked about the president's or his legacy, she's like, this is what people are going to remember you for. He's saying that you're on the wrong side of history on this one. And then is so upset by the situation and kind of what he is putting Lane Hansen through that she ends up going to the Hansen folks, to Lane Hansen's team. And giving them, you know, a sexy nugget, if you will, of that she terminated a pregnancy.
Right.
Early in their marriage, because she knows that choice versus anti-choice is going to be a sticking point for Shelley and the committee, which they choose not to use, again, because of the dignity and the, integrity and all that. But she's ready. I mean, she's ready to switch teams, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, it also demonstrates her strength. And even in just that quieter moment earlier when she stands up to Shelley saying that this is you're doing this wrong, I think also demonstrates her strength. Well, and if
I could jump in real quick there, just to tie it also to Fiona, because you tied her so nicely to Lane. Another thing that then and I'm sorry, I don't know Shelley's wife's name off the top of my head. I haven't looked that up. That she also has. That switching teams that she's doing is a reflection of what Lane did as well, moving from a Republican to a Democrat.
Right.
When she as Lane says it, it's because she felt the party moved out from underneath her, it feels like that's what's happened here to Shelley's wife. She feels like he's like his. What would you say that it's his?
He's become fanatical.
Yeah. Well, and his that his selfish pursuit of his own,
to destroy her
glory has clouded what they got into this for, which had to do with things like hate crime legislation. Yeah. And like, there's all this other stuff that apparently she was most proud of him for. Yeah.
And then, not finally, cause there are other women in it, but the other woman that we hear from throughout is this woman doing an investigation and the little sort of switcheroo, for first time watchers is that you see a woman traveling around the United States, interviewing people, asking about a woman and about her, finances and her, family life and things, but she never says the name and you don't know kind of exactly what she's doing. And for me watching it the first time, because we have that, that deposition that is about Lane Hansen,
right.
That for me you know, really made it like, oh, okay, they have people traveling around investigating. And it turns out
right.
the whole time she's investigating the woman who drowned. And it
right. Who Hathaway did not save. Who
Hathaway was unable to save.
Tried to save, but
and it,
couldn't.
It comes yep. out that the Hathaway people paid that woman to drive into the river in order for him to save her.
Right.
And so that is the end of Hathaway and Fiona. But right. that's another, you know, it's a sort of, I don't know because I haven't read the script, but I would say, you know, sort of plucky young go-getter junior investigator, you know, I mean, she has a,
yes,
she appears wide-eyed at first,
right.
But
that may be part of her,
yeah,
part of her style, part of her skills.
Because when she, you know, people sort of try to veer her in another way, and she kind of comes back to her questions, and she's determined, and so I appreciated that. We don't get to know much about her, but she's, you know, she pops up throughout.
Yeah, and that's a character I like more than a performance I like.
Okay,
I think she feels like she's maybe in a different movie. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is the wide eyed thing is like she seems really really the delivery of the character is maybe a little more chipper than I think the scenes warrant, mm-hmm. and she
especially
it's hard
in
because
a
she
thriller.
Has. Right, you know, taut. This is not a taut performance. No. She delivers the her findings mm-hmm. to the head of the FBI, and then she has a brief interaction with Kermit as he's getting in Marine One or one of the helicopters who's going to take him out.
That's my least favorite part.
Yeah, and she has this whole thing where she's like,
"Sir, sorry, I just wanted to ask you, are you going to dump her?" Because now, sir, this may be really, really inappropriate, but if that's what you guys are thinking, please, you can't do it. She's hope. Hope that the standards are, that there is no double standard. Hope that the goals can be the same.
You know what? You're goddamn right. That was absolutely inappropriate. Robertson.
It feels like that even keeping those lines and having it delivered by someone who was not like chipper Pollyanna type delivery all the way through, who's like been, I'm trying to think of a more taut, intense performer, mm-hmm. Catherine Keener, who could still be kind of quirky, you mm-hmm. know, who could still sort of play different shades. But then we see like the mask drop and that she's, oh, she could like slit your throat,
sure.
you know, with a penknife or whatever.
For the thriller version of this piece.
Yes, exactly. To match the marketing mm-hmm. of this movie. But if you imagine that, and then this woman gives this speech, not with a big like smile, mm-hmm. but with a, you know, like an intensity. I think the moment could have played better. I guess that's what I mean by I like the part more than the performance.
Gotcha. I as we approach the end here.
Uh-huh.
Okay. There are a couple other things I've written down. So obviously through the hearing, it goes not only to these alleged indiscretions, but things about her past and her marriage and her birth control and being an atheist is a big deal, which is a whole, you know, a whole other discussion we could have, but I put in quotes, "I've read your divorce papers," and that just blew my mind. And then was also like, well, of course they did, but
yeah.
'Cause it's public, you know, but oh my gosh, that bothered me. And the other quote I have that I love, and I don't know how I want to present it, but I think it needs to be in my office.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a cross stitch or a shadow uh-huh. box or a written in blood.
Or a mural.
Yes, or a mural. That's if it's not relevant for a man, it's not relevant for a woman in yeah. terms of these kind of disclosure things.
Yep.
I'm not discounting nature. There are things that are very relevant to, you know, one sex, other sex, intersex, what have you. You know, there are different things that are relevant for different folks. But in the context of this kind of thing for taking on in public life,
right.
it's not relevant for a man. It's not relevant for a woman.
Right.
And I like that.
Her, the last thing I wanted to talk about in terms of the movie itself mm-hmm. was her politics. Mm. You know, so the movie wants us to believe that here's a woman who was a Republican senator. I guess we don't know she was a Republican when she was elected to the Senate. She might have switched parties in order to get elected to the Senate, but that she was a Republican before and now is a Democrat from Ohio. And the Republicans don't like her because she switched parties. And Jackson, the president, Jackson Evans wants someone who he says in his opening scene, wants someone who shares his politics to be his vice president. And then you have Christian Slater, who's a Democrat, who's saying like she has positions from the other party. Mm-hmm. And I, as I hear her lay out her positions, I can't find positions that even in 2000 mm-hmm. would have been conservative positions. I mean, she says in the hearing, here's the thing that would sink her hearing.
I know what you're going to say because you said it to me every time we talk about this movie. Say it.
She says in the hearing. No, everybody else hasn't heard this.
I'm excited.
She says in the closing statement, I stand for taking every gun out of every house. Mm-hmm. Now that sinks your nomination.
Yeah, with any party for anything in the U.S.
With any party for right in almost any place.
You can't be the dog catcher.
Right. I mean, there are places and more today than there were in 2000. Sure. But I have a hard time in the scope of this seeing how. And it's not just today. Like today also, even more so, it feels disjointed. But the politics of the movie don't feel coherent to
that
me.
That she could be even a moderate Republican?
Yeah, to hold all of those views. Oh, like, okay. No one mentions – yeah, oh, people could be whatever they want. I just mean to have been elected senator, that's a statewide – office in Ohio. Like it's hard for me to see how she's elected. Also, a subplot to this movie that was cut mm-hmm. was that her father, who is in one scene played by Philip Baker Hall, was apparently in the original script was a corrupt governor mm-hmm. who had I think he'd had to resign in disgrace after he'd used his position to get his daughter elected to the Senate.
Oh yeah, I'm glad they cut that.
I'm so glad they cut that. That doesn't play in this movie and doesn't fit with what the movie is. But in any case, that's the other thing that sort of sticks for me in this movie is that kind of I just wish that felt more coherent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that. Agreed. If we're talking about realistic business, however, I love the speech. You know, that's
the speech is very effective.
Beautiful. Even if you don't want to watch this movie, you should YouTube just her closing statement.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee, remarkably enough, it seems that I have some explaining to do. So let me be absolutely clear. I stand for a woman's right to choose. I stand for the elimination of the death penalty. I stand for strong and growing armed forces because we must stomp out genocide on this planet, and I believe that that is a cause worth dying for. I stand for seeing every gun taken out of every home, period. I stand for making the selling of cigarettes to our youth a federal offense. I stand for term limits and campaign reform. And, Mr. Chairman, I stand for the separation of church and state, and the reason that I stand for that is the same reason that I believe our forefathers did. It is not there to protect religion from the grasp of government, but to protect our government from the grasp of religious fanaticism. Now, I may be an atheist, but that does not mean I do not go to church. I do go to church. The church I go to is the one that emancipated the slaves, that gave women the right to vote, that gave us every freedom that we hold dear. My church is this very chapel of democracy that we sit in together, and I do not need God to tell me what are my moral absolutes. I need my heart, my brain, and this church.
In fact, it's the only parts of this movie that come up on the first page of the search. And if you were on social media helping promote this show, you would see you would see that a month ago, from the time this show's released, which means now as we've recorded, I've been posting, I've made GIFs out of that speech to post on Twitter and on Facebook.
Well, don't throw me under the bus. If we're that far behind, I can catch up.
Okay.
You maybe dick.
By now, Aislinn will be more present on social media.
I tell ya, you just can't do anything right. Hey, do you want to play a game?
I want to play a game.
Okay.
Wait. We're gonna play. Wait. Ask me that again.
Hey, Tobin, do you want to play a game?
I do.
Someone take the bell from him. Okay. This game shares a name with a game from a radio station I once listened to, but it shares nothing else with it. So it's called None Your Business.
I love it. Okay.
It's called, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a series of, or I'm going to make a series of statements, and you're going to tell me if you think those issues are the public has a right to know if you are seeking office or other public, you know, if you are a person of the people. Uh-huh. Or if it's none of your business.
I can't wait. This sounds great. We'll have lighter games too.
Yeah. Okay. But so I'm not asking you if you've done them or not.
No. But
this
fits the movie perfectly. You're so good. You're in charge of the games and I love it. I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Okay. All right. So if you participated in hazing, sexual or otherwise, in college, is that something that people should know?
Oh my gosh. Is there any middle ground where I can say it depends on the kind and quality and your role in it? Like if you were,
okay. So how about this? You could say that to any number of these. These were not meant to be easy.
Yeah. All right. So what I'm going to say is if you were the subject of the hazing, then no. If you were the perpetrator of the hazing, then I think it's probably fair game.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I like it. If you became mayor of your small town at age 18 and due to ineptitude were later impeached, is that something the public should know?
Yes, but that would mean then I got to be on Parks and Rec, which would be great.
I was just going to say, brought to you by Parks and Rec. There are a number of these that have origin stories.
Yes, good.
So you're saying, yes, the people deserve to know.
Well, yeah. If you've been impeached for something, yeah, exactly. Sure. Yeah. You don't think so? That's a public thing. How can you hide that?
I agree. I'm just, okay. I'm not.
Yeah, you sounded shocked like I was out on a limb or something.
No, I just wanted to review your answer for the record. Your current method of birth control.
No, none of your business. Not just your current method of birth control, but your future and past methods of birth control, too.
Okay. Yes. Gotcha. If you have a chronic health condition.
Ooh.
Westwick.
Yeah, there we go. Yes, I would say that is the public's business.
Regardless of its nature as terminal or not?
Well, it depends on the office. Depending on the office. Okay. Yeah. So the more power the office and the more severe the ailment, the more necessity there is to disclose.
Well, you made a little graph there.
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. If you have ever filed for bankruptcy.
Yes, of course. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Excellent.
Well, partly because that's public. Like that could just be found. Like you can't hide that.
Sure. But you can. Yeah. Whatever. We're not going to get into it.
Well, let me put it this way. If you are running for office claiming that business is your, like, is the reason you should be elected because you run a business and you've gone bankrupt before, then
we should hope that would affect people's votes, right?
One would hope. Yep.
In a perfect world.
Yep. What was I saying about this being a much different world now? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So your, partner or spouses, depending on the legal distinction you want to make there, sexual, financial, or health history. So you, not the person running.
Right.
Are any of those things relevant?
I suppose potentially financial, to guard against corruption, but not sexual. What was the other one?
I said sexual, financial, or health.
And not health. I would say health and sex is none of your business, but I would say that financial is, because that's a spouse, partner, however we're defining it, that's all going to be intertwined there. So, yeah. Right.
I agree. I think with health, people would, it would give them pause. Does it have your full attention if your spouse is dealing with X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, I suppose you can make that argument, but
I mean, I'm not saying that's the right answer. I also agree with you. I'm just saying I think that you answered quickly, and the reason I thought it was tricky was your religious affiliation.
None of your business.
And yet,
I know.
Absolutely
I'm alone
no
in that.
Way to get elected.
I'm alone in that. I know. I'm just saying it's none
You're
of your.
Not alone in it.
I'm not saying you have. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't or can or can't. You just it shouldn't be anyone's business what your sort of religious affiliation, if you have one or not, is. That's what I'm saying.
There's a lot of elected folks who feel the need to pretend.
Of course, yeah. As you say, it is a requirement of the of getting elected in many, many places for many, many people.
Okay, we got two more. So I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this in a way that I like, but your gender identity history, if it's been different. So if you are if you are a trans person. Is that something that the public should know if it's not something that you have already disclosed?
No, it's not your business. Not your business. No.
I agree. I'm just asking.
Yeah, I'm answering emphatically.
Okay. And then finally,
because that is going to be a thing. You're right. I mean, that is becoming a thing. Yeah. Where that will become a question more and more frequently. And the answer is it's not your business.
And I think we have come. It's the sexuality is a different struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And still something that I think in an ideal world is none of anyone's business, but
right.
What are you going to
do?
We're going to fight and change it. That's what we're going to do. Finally, any past criminal investigations that is different than convictions.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Investigations. Yes, I guess it should be. I don't know that it should be. It shouldn't be determined. I mean, people get investigated for things all the time, and that smoke does not necessarily mean fire. Yeah, I guess it should be. Yeah, it should be on the table. You should be able to answer for it. And if there's nothing there, you should be able to. On the other hand, if people are investigated, that's a hard one. You picked a hard one. I'm going to say yes. It should be. But I'm uncomfortable with my answer. What would you say?
I like how it's sort of like the I'll take my answer off the air. My answer, but I'm uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
Is it the people's right to know that you've been investigated for?
Let me put it this way: if you were while in office.
I would hope we would know if you're investigated while in office.
Yeah. Okay. Then the answer's got to be yes then. Yep. Okay. I'm more comfortable with my answer now. Thank you.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're more comfortable. That is what we're about here.
My comfort.
Making you comfortable. Comfort of the white men. Okay. Okay. Our next and almost last segment.
Yep. Stick with us, folks. We're almost there.
Progressive or regressive? Is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say progressive, although I think it's problematically progressive. I think we pointed out
that's
places.
The name of my new band.
yes it is
problematically or progressive,
progressively
playing
problematic
this Friday
maybe
night.
But I think it is I think that showing this woman triumph by sticking to her guns, and as you're saying, having the other female characters in the movie also be have their opinions count, have their opinions be voiced and heard and sort of counted by those around them in a movie dominated by men, in a movie whose point of view does feel very male. I think that's I definitely I think it is. What about you? What do you think?
No, I agree. I think a progressive and especially looking at it in a year 2000 world, where I think we, you know, I'm sure we have had at that time stories where women were in office in president or vice president. I'm thinking of, is it Air Force One? Is the vice president a woman?
Oh, wow. I'm going to look that up. I don't know that that's true.
When is Glenn Close vice president? Vice president? Somebody
else. Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
But I should have said that stronger then. Remember in Air Force One.
And Gary Oldman is in that too.
Small world. But so I appreciated the...
Good memory. You get a ding for that. That's great. Good work. Thank you.
I appreciated this demonstrating how we might get there. And of course, in this case, it was the death of a vice president. I mean, it was a special circumstance and that's what it hinges on. But the road and what the road might be littered with, I think is fascinating and unfortunately true on a lot of levels in terms of what are you wearing and are you smiling or not? And have you had sex? And
that kind of thing.
And who do you answer to if it's not the Lord? Various things. So, you know, for that, and then still watching it, I think still watching it today, not only does it posit a world in which, you know, integrity and dignity will produce a winner, which, you know, I love to see. There's a little part of me that's still optimistic and I'm, you know, trying to water and feed that part of me to make it bigger still. So cultivate. I'm trying to cultivate that part. Thank you. So yes, I would say yes. I agree. Problematic as are all artistic expressions when we pick them apart to this degree, right?
Right. I think that's true. Tell me something
that's not problematic at some level. It's a very, you know, we're being overly critical.
We should also say there were two Oscar nominations for this movie: a Best Actress nomination for Joan Allen. Jesus, what happened to me? A Best Actor. We should also say there are two Oscar nominations for this movie: a Best Actress nomination for Joan Allen and a Best Supporting Actor nomination for Jeff Bridges. On a side final trivia note, apparently in 2008, in an interview, when Obama was asked who his favorite movie president was, he named Jackson Evans from The Contender.
I didn't think I could have any more affection for Barack Obama, but I do now.
right, yeah.
You must have told me that in 2008, but I had forgotten it.
I don't have any memory of it until I read it today in prep for this episode. So maybe I did, maybe I didn't. I don't know. But you can see it. I mean, look, he is. I neither confirm nor deny.
He's Joe Biden. That's why.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of Biden in him, and it is a really fun performance. And we didn't get a chance to talk a lot about it. There's a great moment where he smells his shoe in the bowling alley. He's just putting his shoes back on. It's just such a lived in. Sort of presidency. It's really, it's, and as you say, we didn't talk about it either, but just to briefly mention, he has this great dinner with Shelley Rennie, where he seems to be sort of conceding that he's won, and actually he's just setting him up, and it's really delicious. When you know that's what's happening, it's a really fun scene to
it's
watch.
It's much more delicious than watching him eat that steak. So.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what's up next?
Yes, I can. In 2 weeks, we are going to be discussing Wonder Woman. We're going to have a guest co-host with us on that, Cage Club co-founder Joey Lewandowski. So that's I'm very excited both for that conversation and to get to talk to Joey and to have, to sort of get to talk about Wonder Woman. So if you haven't seen Wonder Woman, shame on you. Go watch it and then come hear us talk about it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So Aislinn, tell us people where they can find you. Not online.
Right? At 555. No, it's true. I mean, obviously, I will be available through our Facebook.
You have office hours or something? What's the...
Okay, here's what. I have a Twitter, and I will, by the time this airs, I will have used it.
Yeah. So Aislinn has reinstated her Twitter a few weeks ago as of this taping.
I hiatus.
I have sent her things over Twitter. She's never responded to anything, both from the contenders' Twitter handle and from my own. And so,
okay, so when you say sent me things, you mean you have added me?
Like, yes.
You've tweeted something that has an at to you. So
that's how so here's you do
what
it.
Here's what it is. I am not getting notifications stuff
over Twitter. Well, I must have turned notifications.
Can we cut all that out, please?
No. This is important.
You're so mean.
This needs to be disclosed. This is
the
their
people
business.
Demand to talk to me. I think all the people who talk to me just text me.
So if okay. the people who are new to knowing you from this show love you and want to compliment you, where can they find you on Twitter, Aislinn?
At SassyNerdMT. Shut up. No, I hate you.
No, you, because you are. I think it's great.
Where can they find you, Tobin?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, all one word. And you can find us, you can find our show at facebook.com/thecontenderspod or on Twitter at contenders_pod. So get in touch. Tell us what you thought about The Contender. Tell us what you want to see us talk about in the future or hear us talk about in the future. We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network for all those great shows, things like Cage Club, Keanu Club, Cinemakers, all the rest. Go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub and find them on Twitter at Cage Club Pod.
Go subscribe to all the shows on the network on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. Go ahead and tweet me and tell me where you get your podcasts.
At SassyNerdMT.
MT, like Montana.
There we go.
While you're there being all those places aforementioned where you can find podcasts, please leave us a review. It helps us spread the word and lets the network know that we were a good choice. Yes. If you leave us a comment, a really good one.
Yeah, leave us a good one. Yeah.
We might read it on an upcoming show. And of course, we determine what is good and what is not. So.
Yeah, but you could like disagree with us too. That could be interesting
to
get another perspective.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not too much.
No.
A little bit.
Don't be mean about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
and
the internet.
Nobody's
mean. Nobody's mean on the internet.
No one's mean on the internet. In conclusion, I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Tobin Addington. No, wait, we're supposed to do it the other way around. Oh, I didn't switch this. Sorry.
You highlighted it.
I'm sorry. Let's switch it right now.
Okay.
I'm Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
Okay, right.
Hey, Tobin.